When we hit the number one business podcast in the US and Canada, New Zealand, Australia in November 2021, it was a big deal. We had a photo shoot for it from one of the press that wanted to interview us. And the photographer said, he was like, I don't mean to be offensive, but you don't really look like the kind of people that have the number one business podcast in the world this week. And I know he didn't mean it in any other way, but it's true. It's two South Asian women that, you know, can talk about the Kardashians in one sentence and then equity markets in another.
All right, so today I'm so excited. We've got Simran Kaur from Girls That Invest, but that's got bigger and better and brighter and new themes now. So welcome, welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here. I'm excited for this chat.
Well, I can't wait, actually. To be honest, people, we have actually had a huge chat before, so we're going to have to regurgitate some of the great conversation we just had. Now, look, could you start, though, by, I'm sure everybody knows who you are and what it's all about, but can you talk us through what Girls That Invest is about?
Of course. So in very simple terms, we're a media company. We started in New Zealand, and the idea behind it was making investing education as accessible as possible. So that looks like the podcast that we do. We use social media to reach people. We do workshops. We have a book, and that kind of encompasses us.
Great. So it's kind of, you know, very holistic. So anyone listening, just so they understand, it's not just a podcast. Podcast is super important, but that's kind of can be a teaser, and then you actually learn how to do whatever you've got to do, whatever you're teaching in different ways with the books and the workshops and things. Pretty cool.
Yeah, so it started off as the podcast, and I think that's where people like first found us. And then it's just been so awesome to be able to, you know, reach people in different ways, because not everyone's a podcast listener. Not, some people...
They should be.
They should be, absolutely. But some people prefer to like read their way into education, and they have the attention span, good for them.
Yeah, no, so old-fashioned. So. Look, I mean, what was the main, was there a moment in time that you just knew you had to do this, or did it kind of evolve from something else? Can you talk us through like how you got to where you got to now?
Yeah, of course. I'll start back when I was in university. So I didn't begin in the financial sector. I was an optometrist. And so I was studying that. And the University of Auckland encourages you to take courses outside of your degree.
Cool.
They want you to be a holistic person. They don't want, you know, they were kind of like, there's more to the world than eyeballs. Yep. And we were like, really? Like, wouldn't have known. And so I did like a international business paper, a marketing paper. And then one thing I did was a financial market certification through Yale. And it was just to like gain an understanding of this world that I wasn't really familiar with.
Nice.
And it just blew my mind. And it was so interesting. And I was so inspired. I was like, that's what the stock market is. Like, that's how insurance works. And then I was almost angry because I was like, that's actually quite simple. And I didn't grow up with a lot of that kind of financial literacy, like lots of saving and lots of how to, you know, be frugal, but nothing about risk or nothing about how to grow your money. And so that was kind of the catalyst for it. And then the day I actually decided to do something about it was March 2020 happened, markets dropped. Because of my healthcare background and my financial literacy, I was like, oh, this is actually not going to be the end of the world. Like, we will recover from this. It's just another day in the markets. But then going to work and seeing everyone freak out and move their KiwiSavers, and everyone was, you know, going into like more less risk adverse funds.
And basically, basically crystallizing losses.
Crystallizing losses. And that's when it kind of hit me where I said, oh, like, this is the benefit of financial literacy, being able to not react in situations like this. And we need maybe more accessible information out there that's unbiased and just, you know, there for people to take what they need.
And not, but boring.
And
I mean,
not
some
boring.
Of it, man, you listen to it and you're like, you're out within 3 seconds. It's sort of, and that's what I love about your podcasts. And, you know, I've listened to many, many, many of them. It's, they're quick, they're snappy, and you have a really set topic.
Yes.
And it just makes it really digestible. I mean, I can get through several on my walk if I'm having a good morning.
Oh, wow. It's a long walk.
It is a long walk. But it's just one of those things that I think that the empowerment of education enables people then to get better at and learn more.
I think it comes from what I thought I would like to hear when I was younger. And for me, like, I don't think I have a very big attention span. You know, I watch TikTok. You're really spending a few seconds at it on a time, a topic. And so I wanted it to be something that you could listen in, have a laugh, and then at the end of the episode you go, oh, wait, I just learned how, like, this microeconomic factor plays into the stock market. That's so cool.
Yeah, and it is really important because I think with economics, and look, you know, maybe I'm a bit biased, but I feel sometimes with economics, macro themes, markets, that people kind of think it's a side thing that just happens in the world. But what they don't realise is it's actually the centre of everything that happens in our day. And how cool hearing that you mixed your financial markets and your health knowledge together in it, that wider, even more so demonstrates the value of having diverse knowledge.
Absolutely, yeah. I think people think that you have to have studied like finances in university to even like invest for yourself, or that you can't even talk about it unless you have a background in it. But I think all the differences we have in our lives add to our strength of what we can learn and what we can, you know, add value to other people.
So talk us through any of the sort of the profile of the women investors. Like, did you do some research and find out how many women are investing? And like, do you have some numbers for us that show what that looks like?
It's starting to change, I think, post-COVID, but pre-COVID that was looking like 16 to 24% of women in New Zealand were investing, compared to around 40% of men. And that was the same in the US, in the UK. So it wasn't a New Zealand issue. It was sort of more of a global issue. And that was really scary because we have, of course, the wage gap, which we are trying to fix, but then we've also created this wealth gap by making less and then investing less.
Yeah, yeah, that's yeah, unfortunately, yeah, horrifically true. So have you had feedback? Like, do you know what the impact has been so far? Have you had kind of, have people said, hey, I've actually started investing in the share market, or I've started saving, or what's the...
The feedback has been fantastic. I think it's the thing that, like, really keeps us going. I remember when we first started, someone reached out and said, thank you for not being the generic male voice. You were just the voice I needed. And I remember reading that and I wrote it down and I stuck it on my wall. Yes. Because I was like, you know, for a long time, this was very much like a passion project, which involved a lot of hours outside of our 9 to 5. And just seeing that again and again was like, okay, like this actually like seems to help people. And we still daily get messages from people going, I bought my first home because of the podcast, or I started investing because of the podcast, or I felt really inspired to actually go to a financial advisor, and I felt very well equipped because he or she was using words that I understood and I knew. And that to me is, I think, what we really offer. It's the tools to let people go into spaces where maybe they felt uncomfortable, but now turn up with their own, you know, toolkit of jargon that they can use.
Look, it is a terrifying space. Mm-hmm. You know, it is something that's quite scary. I mean, one of your podcasts was so fantastic that you actually reassured people that you might just want to put money on term deposit.
Yeah.
So there wasn't a right or wrong. There isn't a, and then you sort of went, I think there was another one where you talked about the risk, you know, how you might feel as a person or what might be happening in your life. And I think those are the beautiful nuances that don't get delivered in the market, that we don't tell people that there's multiple ways to invest. We don't tell people that you might not be confident enough, and it might not even be confidence, just the hate, the way you're made up. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big risk gal. I like the old term deposit too. Didn't like it much when it was 0.5%.
No.
You know, different people will require different things. And I think what you've done is you've really empowered anyone in any level of investment to feel more confident.
Oh, thank you. That's a huge compliment. It's nice to know that it's coming across.
I genuinely wish that this was around when I was younger. And, you know, I've had an interesting learning, financial journey myself. We're terrible financial literacy, and I have worked my whole life in the financial sector.
I think, like, we get a lot of that. We get a lot of people saying, I wish this existed like 10 years ago or 20 years ago, for some people even longer. But I always try to tell myself, or remind us, like, women were only able to open up bank accounts in like the 1970s. Like, wow. That's when it first started, not just in New Zealand, in the US, in the UK. Up till 1982, women still needed to sometimes get their dads to co-sign a mortgage, even if they could afford it themselves. So this isn't like many generations ago. This is either our generation or like our mother's generation, where we weren't able to open our own bank accounts. And yet we sit here and we kind of say, why didn't I learn this, or why didn't I get that? Well, there's a huge disparity in how many generations of like financial education was passed down to our dads and our brothers and our, you know, grandfathers versus us.
So it's kind of, I guess, in a way, hardwired in us sometimes to think. And look, I'll be the same. I mean, I think of myself as a pretty staunch chick, but every now and then I'm, you know, I remember, you know, years ago thinking, can I actually buy a house on my own?
Yeah.
Is that actually possible? You know, do people do that? None of my friends have done that. They bought it with their husbands. You know, like all of these things that in your mind, when you do it, you're like, yeah, it's really simple. But before you do it, it's quite terrifying.
And it's also like culturally ingrained in us a little bit. Like, is it wrong to buy a home without a guy? Like, what will a guy think of me if he turns up and I'm like, oh, well, I've already got mine, so I guess I can't buy one with you right now. It's just, it's interesting how, like, the way we've been brought up affects the way that we look at money, like, even decades after.
And isn't money such a funny thing? You know, we've only just started talking about mental health. And you wonder if we just talked about money more, if it was more of a topic that it wasn't. It feels taboo sometimes. You just don't talk about the fact that you need money or that you aren't good with money or that you need lessons. You know, how do we shift that thinking?
It's funny you say that, because I actually had a message from a family member yesterday being like, do you have to share your net worth online? He goes, do you really need to, like, be sharing hard numbers in a way that – it was coming from more of like a safety perspective. But to me, I think the beauty in sharing numbers or being open about money does more net positive, and it's actually a disservice when we hush about it, and it's a disservice when we say to children, like, you know, don't ask how much that was, or like, don't ask, you know, so-and-so how much they make. That's rude. Growing up, I was a really nosy child, and if I went to someone's home where they had a lot of nice things, I would ask them, like,
respect. I'm respecting you for that.
I'm like, what do your parents do? I was making an inventory in my head of, like, what professions let them have, like, this nice house or this nice car.
I'm going to be needing to see your parents' account.
Yeah, I'm going to need a rundown of, like, how this works. And I remember being told off for it, but to me, I was like, well, if they tell me, then that's going to better my financial position. I'm going to learn something. So I don't understand why it's so hush. So I think there's so much benefit in sharing these things if you're comfortable. And if we have a lot of people ask us in our community or our listeners, like, how do I get that conversation started amongst my friends or my family? Because, you know, I want to talk about it, them maybe not so much. My answer to that is, if you're open and vulnerable, if you lead that way, you're going to, the people that want to talk about it will. Like, if you say, this is what I do, this is how much I make, this is what I've saved, the friends that want to speak up about it as well and have an interest will then feel comfortable, but you have to be the one that leads with vulnerability.
Well, it inspires you, doesn't it? I mean, it's like having a friend that all of a sudden gets super fit.
Yeah.
And you feel a little bit jealous because, gosh, she looks fantastic in that dress and I want to look like that. But then you're like, well, how's she done it? And then you start talking about it and then all of a sudden you start walking, running, or whatever that might look like, or going to the gym. You know, surely it can be the same with finances.
I completely agree. I think the podcast actually started this way. Sonia is my co-host, but also my best friend of 20 years. And we've known her my whole life almost. But we never talked about money. And so we talked about boys. We talked about, like, work. We talked about our bowel movements, like, anything but not money.
Good bit of poop talk never hurts anyone.
Never hurts. It brings you closer.
Yeah.
And one day I was like, I have this confession. I want to buy a house one day. I know it sounds crazy. This is my income. This is what I've invested in. This is my goal. And then she goes, oh, that's so cool. Like, I've saved up a bit of money. I have X amount. And my, like, jaw dropped to the floor. I was like, since when did you have all that cash just sitting there? Like, you don't really, you know, walk around or dress or act like you've got a lot and you've got this huge lump sum. Sonia had been working for a long time. And so we just kind of had this, like, epiphany moment where we looked at each other and realized there was this entire section of our personality or our lives that we just didn't know. And that was someone I've known for 20 years. So for us, we thought, well, if we jump on this podcast, start sharing our journeys, hopefully it will encourage other friends to go and do the same, to share the episode with one of their friends and go, that's so interesting that they talked about this. Also, how much do you make?
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually a really good question. I mean, I laughed when you were saying you walked around the house and wondered what people earned, because I know that I've done a little bit of work in schools around agriculture and careers. And the first question that comes out is always, how much do you earn?
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's, and so people actually care at this younger age. And I think if we make things taboo, then they don't talk about it. But is there a country somewhere that's just nailed this? Is there somewhere that, no, okay.
No, I have been very fortunate in the work we do to have done a lot of traveling, because unfortunately it's a, like, very widespread problem. In some cultures more than others. I think in the UK it is even more perhaps rude or tabooed. I mean, they don't like, in general, talking about anything uncomfortable.
Yeah, they don't like talking much.
Yeah, it's a very, like, keep to yourself way of going. And Americans, like, when we work with them, they're very open, but still money is still odd. And so same with Australia, even in India. So it's still just this weird subset. But in saying that, in Indian culture where I'm from, it's not odd for your grandpa to go, hey, how are you? How much do you make now? And so having a little bit of that growing up has sort of helped me infiltrate that into the work that we do.
Isn't it funny? Is it soul destroying to hear that it's global, or is it comforting? You know,
like exactly. It's... Yeah, I think on one hand, because people will ask us, like, what's the difference between Kiwi investors and investors in the UK? And it's like, just no one's investing. That's the same. Like, it's not our cultures that make us different. It's the lack of, like, knowledge or the lack of accessibility that have kind of kept us all in the same boat.
And I think we need to make people feel safe and okay that they don't understand and there's no bad place to start. The worst thing you can do is not start.
That's very true. I often like to say, like, at one point Warren Buffett asked, what's a share? Warren Buffett was like, what is the stock market thing? Like, no one comes out with a manual in their hand. We've all asked those questions that make us feel dumb. It's just allowing yourself to go, it's okay if the day I ask that question is different to someone else.
The more people that know, the more people are getting into the market.
You just want to figure out what's best for you, and that's where the professionals come in to guide you to the right answer. But I feel like for a long time, finance didn't catch up in that way, where that information wasn't accessible. And so we got to get away with it a little bit longer of having this gap between the everyday person and the knowledge that they needed to make, you know, investment decisions. So now that it's starting to catch up, I'm seeing that tug now that we saw like 10 years ago with healthcare. But it's a good thing to let people try to learn things themselves, but that's where the professionals come in to help, you know, guide them to the right place.
And I guess it's taking away that thing of thinking you've got to have a gazillion dollars and then or once you're rich you start investing. You know, it's the whole idea is even base saving, you know, even trying something, you know. And that was where you talked, you know, the lovely podcast where you made it really comfortable for anyone regardless of what they invested in, and talked through all the different ways you could invest. But it's possible for anyone.
It really is. And there's still, like, stories we hear today. There was this, like, amazing young Māori woman who was, when she told us a story, and it happened a few years ago. She was 23. She had $10,000 to invest, which is a lot of money for a young person, let alone anyone.
A lot of money for an old person, I can assure you.
A lot of money for all of us. I'm sure we could do with an extra $10,000. And she went to the bank and said to them, hey, I've got this money. I'd like to invest. I'm just getting started. And whoever she was speaking to said, come back when you've got a few more zeros at the end of that number. And imagine if she didn't have access to any other way of learning. She would have taken that as gospel and said, well, I guess I need $100,000 or $1 million to invest. That's what a few zeros at the end of 10,000 is. Like, that was just insane. And it was a few years ago. So we do have fractional shares available. Like, that was not the right answer.
I mean, you know, if that motivated her to find the other zeros, that's awesome over time. But at the same time, it should be great. You need to talk to, or have you considered X? There's so many different methods and ways that the markets enable people to save.
Absolutely. I find that when you invest as well, it feels like when you're going towards a goal, it's harder to pull away, because suddenly pulling that like $100 out of your investment account could be, you know, $200 in a few years, but if I take it out now, like, I'm pulling away from that house deposit I'm saving up for, or my early retirement. There's suddenly like a thing that you're pulling away money from, as opposed to, you know, $100 for future me that I'm sure I'll make up another time.
Yeah, I'll put that back next week. Mm. Now, look, I mean, there's no secret that we've got some financial instability globally right now. Look, I personally never fear it. I just think it's better to prepare for it. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, my view is cycles are cycles and they're really good resets and they usually calibrate things well. But what would your advice be to those who maybe are feeling a little bit insecure, a little bit worried? That $10,000 might be all they have. You know, what are you telling people at the moment around that?
I think the first thing is acknowledging that it must feel so hard for a lot of people. They did begin in 2020, 2021, which was, you know, a really great time to be investing. Anything you bought at that time was doing well. And maybe we've perhaps felt a false sense of, I'm a really great investor, like all 10 out of 10 are like in the green. I know it can feel hard if you are in that position, but the most important thing is remembering why you're investing and remembering your goal. If you're trying to make a quick buck, then yes, it is quite scary right now and you possibly might lose money, but that was always the gamble always the risk that you were taking with high risk, you know, high reward. If you're investing for the long term, which I think a lot of people listening in are, where you're trying to invest for that, you know, home deposit in 5-10 years, or the, you know, your child's deposit in 20 years, for me, it's retirement that I'm trying to save towards, you know, trying to get that number a little bit less than 65. The markets move up and down. It's just part of the cycle. And I really like what you said. It is a reset. And if something happens in 1 to 3 years, does that really impact what you're doing in 30 years' time? That's kind of the way I look at it. And suddenly those bumps just feel a lot smaller.
Everyone panics in a moment and believes it's never going to get better. There's almost this sense of we have a split second where we lose hope and we lose sense.
And I think what I always find helpful, and I understand that, of course, like past performance does not guarantee the future. But if you just type in like NZX 50 history and you look at what the shares have done over time, you see all those dips. And in every moment of that dip, people have asked themselves, is this it? Is this where I pull my money out? And at least in the past, up till now, it has always recovered in the long term. And again, not a guarantee that we'll never see a dip that we don't recover from, but it's given me more reassurance than assuming that, you know, it's so volatile and you never know. And, you know, today it could drop 80%, whereas that's never happened before. It drops, it comes up, but it's not, you know, 0 to 100, which is what it feels like sometimes.
Yeah, well, like that March 2020, which inspired this, you know, thank goodness for that drop, because otherwise we wouldn't have you doing this. but then, you know, there was a quick turn, a really quick turn within a matter of weeks.
And you just wouldn't, you know, if you weren't dollar cost averaging or just trying to be in the market, you would have absolutely missed it. And I remember it happened. I would put this down to luck rather than ability, but I was like, oh, this is a good drop. Let me put a little bit extra cash in. Let me put some into Tesla. Again, more of a luck than smart decision making. Yep. But it meant that within a year, I was able to buy a house because it just came right back up. And those are instances where it's a good reminder to understand time in the market is much better than trying to time the market.
And also, you know, it's diversification. It's understanding who you are. And I think, you know, and what I could say to anyone listening is if you go on Facebook and someone tells you something's a sure thing, that's not real.
No.
You know, there is no such thing as a sure thing. Nothing goes in one direction. Things do move around. And I think it's important to understand the whole vision of the market, who you are, what your risk is like, rather than try and think that you're going to be the lucky one.
Yeah. No, we're not all Wolf of Wall Street as much as we like to think.
So. No, it's just a movie. You know, it was, you know, I'm sure they had a lot of fun, but that, you know, there's a lot of loss as well. And I do wonder, you know, in this financial conversation, do we need more conversations around where we have loss?
I think so. I think normalizing loss with your finances helps people calibrate what the highs are and what the lows are. If we don't talk about the highs or the lows, you're leaving it up to people's imaginations to work out, well, what's the most I can make or how much can I lose? Even the idea that on average the stock market returns 7 to 10% is not common knowledge. And so if you don't get that, you go, wait, can I turn a dollar into $1 million? Is that what people do in the stock market? And by seeing real life examples, you're going to be able to say, actually, no, okay, that's not very realistic. I'm going to pull that down. Do people just lose everything in a day? Okay, no, that's not realistic. I'm going to pull that back up. And you get more of a real sense of what the everyday investor looks like.
That's awesome. Yeah, I know with currency trading, people used to invest in currency and it would be amazing. They'd have a great year and then they'd think they'd nailed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got it. I've got the formula. You know, I'm going to set up my website. Everyone should follow me. And, you know, and the loss was huge.
Yeah.
But again, that was speculating. That was high risk. And it comes back to the individual, doesn't it?
There was this really great study or report that came out by S&P. I think it was in 2017. And they spoke on you know, professional fund managers, so people that do this for a living, in the short term, a lot of them, you know, do make great returns, beat the market. But over a 15-year period, 92 to 98% of them actually don't beat the market. And so you've got a very small number of people that do well long term when you're trying to, you know, actively invest. And not trying to say it's impossible, but it's so good to have more of a realistic view on what you can do.
Yeah, and I mean, it's back to the reason why you're doing it. But look, can you talk us through what are the key factors to the success of all this?
I've wondered about this a lot, and I think part of it felt like luck, and I think part of it felt like something I couldn't put my finger on. So we actually did a census and we asked, and we thought, well, realistically, we'll just ask everyone why they listen in. And so we did a census, we had 1,000 people answer, and the number one word that came up was relatability. And relatability and representation. Those were the two things that came up. It came up higher than the information that we were sharing. So it amazing. Wasn't that the information was fantastic, which shocked me personally.
You're like, whoa, offensive.
I was like, we really try with
this. We need more leading questions in this next time.
Right. But it was who we were for some reason. And I think that came down to the average investor is not someone that looks like us or sounds like us or dresses like us. When we hit the number one business podcast in the US and Canada, New Zealand, Australia in November 2021, it was a big deal. We had a photo shoot for it from one of the press that wanted to interview us. And the photographer said, he was like, I don't mean to be offensive, but you don't really look like the kind of people that have the number one business podcast in the world this week. And I know he didn't mean it in any other way, but it's true. It's two South Asian women that, you know, can talk about the Kardashians in one sentence and then equity markets in another. We were speaking to an audience that could relate to us that didn't feel like the average investor was someone that they could be. And I truly believe that you can't be what you can't see. If you can't see someone that looks like you doing something, it takes a certain personality to think you can.
And you don't know until you know.
It's, yeah, it's so important to us. And I think it was quite intentional for us to be ourselves and to share all aspects of our personality rather than just talking about the money. Because I think if you listen in to the show, you'll realize, you know, we've made mistakes. We're not actually always good with money. I've had letters from debt collectors being like, you have a parking fine that you haven't paid.
Yeah.
What's wrong with you? And, you know, those are things that you wouldn't put to someone that you'd consider a good investor, but it's more just humanizing, you know, what we do.
Hey, look, so you're number one. That's massive. Talk us through, how did you leverage that? How did this happen? I mean, and don't give me the luck story because I'm not buying into that, because I think you're amazing and everything you is structured. So how did you do it?
How did we do it? I think it came down to understanding where are the people that we want to talk to. And the people we want to talk to are not going to go onto Spotify or Apple Podcasts and type in stock market investing podcast. Like, that's, no one comes home after a long day of work and does that. So for me, it was, well, where are these people spending their time? Social media. Back in the day, a few years ago, that was Instagram. Now it's moved over to TikTok. But that was what I knew, where I knew people were. And so it was, well, how do we leverage that? And you've kind of got to imagine the everyday person, they're scrolling on their phone, they're seeing lots of like 50 different things all at once. How do you capture their attention in like the 0.1 second you have as they're scrolling for them to go, oh, that's quite interesting? So for me, it was creating bite-sized investing news pieces or content, or breaking down the jargon of blue chip stocks mean this. And then using language that was very familiar. So we would say things like, you know, a blue chip stock is kind of like the stable boyfriend that your parents want you to be with. It doesn't go up and down too much. It's a little bit boring at times, but it's, you know, not as risky. And then you've got growth stocks, which is kind of like the high risk boyfriend that you're, you know, you're not really sure where it's going to go. It might crash and burn. It might do really well, but you're taking on more of a risk.
I'm scarily relating to the boyfriend analogies, by the way.
They're great analogies.
Yeah.
Everyone can relate to them. And so it comes down to, I think it came down to that. I think it came down to finding people where they were and talking to them in a way that they felt like, okay, this is clearly for me. Like, this is so specifically yelling my name, because there's been plenty of investing podcasts for people in general, but that we saw there was one that was a very neutral company, great company, but even though it was gender neutral, it was still 80% of men listening in. And they weren't branding it towards men. Men just felt in general more comfortable jumping on.
Yep.
And so for us, it was very much like an equitable level of marketing, or an equitable level of, this is for you. Like, I am shaking your shoulders and telling you, like, you're meant to be here and you're meant to listen in if you want this. And that's a lot of why I think people listened in.
That's awesome. And so is there any key challenges that you've been through? You know, is there anything that...
I think the main thing that we came across was just scaling, honestly, because we grew faster than we could handle. I mean, it was just Sonia and I recording and editing outside of our work, and it took a while before we realized we've actually got to quit our jobs and do this full time, which is, you know, try telling your parents that you're going to quit your job to do a podcast. Doesn't go down too well.
I can't imagine, no.
You've also got to realize, like, it's a bit of a responsibility when you have a platform. If you can talk about money, you've got to be very aware that you can influence how someone views it or what they do. And even if it's not financial advice, you saying anything because of who you become or the credibility that you might gain in their eyes, that can sway them. And you've got to be very careful of that.
I think, though, the tone through all of your podcasts are very respectful. Like, I would be shocked if someone ever felt that, that there's no sort of raciness about it. That's like, hey, you have to do this. You're very, very respectful. It's very dignified. And I just love it. I love the way you've done it. What's the coolest thing that's happened, though? Like, I've seen you all around the world. I want to know what's the coolest thing.
The coolest thing that's happened? I think we've had some pretty cool moments. I think the first coolest thing, which was maybe like the day we were like, maybe we're onto something, we got invited to be interviewed by Vogue. And it was a photo shoot, and we'd never had a photo shoot in our lives. And so to have someone doing our hair and someone doing our makeup and someone turning up being like, this is the dress you'll wear. I mean, I hadn't even heard of that brand that they had put on me. Like, it was Sonia and I just kept looking at each other like, is this happening? Do they know who we really are? Like, it was a very like imposter syndrome moment. And then we thought it would be like a very sweet little corner article. It ended up being like a 2-page spread that was, I think, the first thing that happened to us and, like, the thing that, like, blew our minds.
That is freaking cool.
You never would imagine that. I mean, we started the podcast in my cold little flat in Hamilton. We'd ask our flatmates to be quiet for 2 hours while we record. The older episodes still have them, like, clanking their dishes in the background.
Keeping it real.
Keeping it real.
Now, I've noticed that you've evolved the theme, so you've sort of now got a daily theme.
Mm-hmm.
What's next, though? Where's your vision? What's the future look like?
I think making investing as accessible as possible is the next step. A lot of the things I want to do involve kind of getting back to the grassroots of it, and that looks like, for me, getting into schools, working in New Zealand. We have done a few projects with like certain youth councils, and there is nothing more fun to me than like showing the next generation what's possible and sharing with them. Like, you might remember like the conversations that happened at your school when, you know, a certain group of people came in. I don't know if you remember like the Attitude people that would come in, or like the Harold the Giraffe, like van things. Those things stick with you. Yeah. Anything that you hear when you're young, you absorb.
Ronald McDonald made us click.
Yes. Oh, yeah. My God, yes. And so getting into schools early and teaching this early, I think, is going to do much more help than trying to like focus on just the unlearning. I think there's two groups of people we're dealing with, the people that were going, no, you can invest, it's great, but also making sure it's not just, you know, at the bottom of the cliff, actually like getting to people before it starts changing.
So inspiring a new generation of confident investors. That's and you know what? I could not think of a thing that would be better for our economy than that.
Oh, thank you.
Now, look, I've got some fun quick fire. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they're fun. I mean, I'm probably going to ad-lib a little bit here. Now, look, the best advice you've ever received?
The best advice I've ever received has been to only take advice from people that have done the thing that you're getting advice from. So what I mean by that is, if I'm asking for a business advice, I'll only take it from a business owner. If I'm getting advice about investing, I'll probably take it from someone that's actually put money in the market.
Cool.
All the people in our lives have opinions, but if you listen to all the opinions, you actually end up doing nothing.
Wow, that great. I love that concept of actual facts.
Yeah.
Well, and actually learning from people who have experienced rather than learning from people who've experienced via someone else's experience.
Yeah, because otherwise it's more of a fear-based thing. Like, oh, don't invest. You know, it's too scary. I have an uncle's friend that invested.
The old uncle's friend that invested once. He lost his house. He lost everything. Now, look, it's funny to ask this, but what do you listen to?
What do I listen to? I actually don't listen to a lot of money podcasts. I think it comes down, when you do it for work, you almost just want to zone out. I listen to a lot of, like, what would I call it? There's this podcast called Celebrity Memoir Book Club. And it's two comedians, and they will read a celebrity memoir and they'll tear it to pieces. And it is so funny.
Oh, I love it. So something light.
Something light, something that switches my brain off. I love things where I don't have to think.
You just keep getting cooler. Mine's Family Guy.
Oh, yeah.
But not in a podcast. I'm old school. I watch the telly. What about your favourite quote?
My favourite quote? My favourite quote is it's by Maya Angelou, and it's, people will not always remember what you say or what you do, but they'll always remember how you make them feel.
I love that. That's beautiful. And the last one, what's one piece of advice for someone looking to start their own company?
I think if you're looking to start your own company, the first thing that has helped me in every company I've ever built is build the community first and then build the product second. By doing that, I didn't have to start with any money to grow Girls That Invest. It was the online community. It was the listeners of the podcast. And then when we started going, okay, we might have something here, we didn't have to buy focus groups. We could just ask them on our Instagram story, hey, what do you want from us? Do you want workshops? Do you want a book? Do you want a paid subscription? Oh, you don't want that? You want a book? Okay, well, that's what we're going to do. And so that was the best and easiest way for us to scale.
So, Maren, I don't even know how to say thank you. You are an inspiration to many generations. The more that we empower people to have the confidence to invest, as I said before, the better our economy will be. And that is, I guess, irrelevant of gender or age. We just all need the help. And I just think that you are an incredible representation of your generation. Thank you so much for coming here to NZX to have a talk with us.
Thank you for letting me have a platform to speak. I appreciate it.
The information provided in this podcast is a guide and is intended for general information purposes only. The information is not investment advice. The information should not be relied upon as a substitute for detailed advice from a professional advisor. The podcast may contain opinions or forward-looking statements, and actual results may vary from what is expressed in this podcast. The views expressed in this podcast are those of the presenter or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of NZX. NZX Limited is not liable for any loss suffered through relying on the information in this podcast. NZX makes no warranties as to the accuracy or completeness of the information in this podcast. All intellectual property rights in the content of this podcast are owned or used under license by NZX, and NZX's written consent is required to use, redistribute, or reproduce the content, or use it to create other works.